Josh, as a little pre-show, how was your weekend?
It wasn't too bad. I'm still exhausted, but otherwise feeling pretty good. So yeah, that's good. I will say I during my COVID, I spent a lot of time watching the Drive to Survive documentary series on Netflix, the Formula One one.
The F1, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I like it. I really like, and I think the biggest thing is that, like, when I was in college, I wanted to start watching more baseball. And the first thing I did is I grabbed a friend of mine who's really into sports, and I was like, I need help picking a baseball team. Because the big part about it is it's hard to follow a sport where you just know who nobody is and don't care about anybody. And so I think what's so smart about the Drive to Survive series and about DGN, you know, with as Jamie talked about when he was co-host about the upcoming series, is that it's necessary to have storylines and people to root for in order to really be engaged in a sport. And so now it was like, oh, I might actually watch a Formula One race. The Hungarian Open was today, but I didn't have time to watch it. But I might watch one in the future. So I enjoyed the series. I'm not done with it, but I've enjoyed what I've watched.
I think it's a perfect. We're basically starting the show right now, but I mean, it's a perfect example of how fandom starts for whatever thing, you know, like most people. I'm just going to, you know, I'm speaking casually here. I have no insight into the Formula One world, really, to be honest, but I would imagine that the large majority of Americans probably have heard of Formula One, but like knew nothing about it or had no connection to it. You know, it feels like this thing that happens in rich countries internationally and they're, you know, whatever, it's car racing. And like, the thing about that show that's made it so successful is that it's offered people the opportunity into like connecting with the individuals that makes it possible to care about wanting to watch the races. I can't tell you how many people I know that like actually get up and watch F1 now. Yeah. I'm not one of those people. I haven't watched a show. I've never watched a Formula One race. I'm excited for the Vegas thing. I'm excited for the Miami thing, but like, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to watch every sport ever as much as I like sports, but I can see how that is a powerful thing. And I think that, you know, individual sports offer that opportunity, including disc golf. Okay, so let's get into it here. Looking forward to getting your thoughts in the Upshot Live chat. Again, we're in the Upshot Live channel in the Discord. If you roll over the sidebar, or if you're on mobile, if you click on the thing, you will see a little dialogue box icon. If you click that, you will get into the chat. And that's where you can ask questions, reacts, etc. Josh Mansfield alongside Charlie Eisenhood. And we just got back on American soil. Discraft Great Lakes Open, number 40. And a very interesting weekend. You know, it's not a major. And I got to be honest with you. I wasn't super excited about the event coming into the weekend. It's always hard for me to get motivated to care following a major. Always. Every time. Anytime there's this short turnaround, I'm always like, whatever, man. But I think this was a very interesting weekend, and there's lots to talk about. Calvin Heimberg beats Corey Ellis by a stroke in the playoff. And over in FPO, Natalie Ryan getting a two-shot win over Owen Scoggins. Natalie Ryan's first Elite Series win. It looked like Corey Ellis might get his first Elite Series win, but not to be. Calvin Heimberg gets the job done as Ellis goes out of bounds on the first and only hole of the playoff. Where do we start here, okay? Where do we start here? I think, a great battle. It's so fun to watch Corey Ellis playing well because, I mean, the guy is so automatic from inside the circle that you're just like, oh, okay, that's going to, you know, he throws the shot to the green, and if he's inside 35 feet, you know it's in. So you're like, okay, well, that's a birdie, and you can just like sort of move on with your life. And that's, I find that very interesting because it puts a lot of pressure on, in this case, Calvin, just guys in general. I found that part of this whole thing fascinating. It's I feel like it's a matter of time before he wins one, Josh.
Yeah, I think so too. He really does seem to play in a style that he has the whole package. You don't watch Corey Ellis and think, oh, you know, he's just a great putter and that's going to be enough. And you know, because Owen, we talk about, Owen has a clear deficiency in her game, right? That her distance just is not enough in order to be competitive. But if you look at Corey Ellis' stats, I mean, he's 13 strokes gained tee to green. Calvin was 16. But then you have to go down. I mean, he beats out Ricky and Adam and Gavin. And so plenty of players who were well behind him in strokes gained tee to green. And he is an excellent putter. That's obviously his forte. But he's an all-around really strong, solid player. And so I think I agree with you that I really feel like Corey Ellis is going to have his moment, though today just wasn't it.
Yep, instead it goes to Calvin Heimberg, who, let's be honest, has been in a bit of a slump. You know, as slumpy as somebody this good can get into. You know, what are his finishes been lately? You know, like, he's even talked about, like, he was not feeling super sharp, right? He finished 49th at Beaver State Fling, and yeah, it was a Silver Series, but you're like, okay, it's a little shaky. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, Calvin's getting into the point where it's kind of Paul territory, where when he finishes outside the top 10, even if he's, like, 11th, you go, wow, bad weekend for Calvin. And that's just, like, an expectations thing. At the end of the day, you know, he hasn't really missed. He hasn't missed a top 20 outside of that Beaver State Fling all season. And at Elite Series events, he's been in that 10-12 range a lot of the time. Finishes 8th at the European Open, and then, of course, gets the win here at D-Glow. It's his second win of the season after he won at Jonesboro. Interesting to see Calvin successful at Jonesboro and then D-Glow. I feel like Toboggan and Jonesboro are very similar courses.
Yeah, I mean, I know you said that in the preview when we were getting ready for the tournament as well. And that's, I think then, you know, if that's Calvin, I think that the reason they feel similar is because they have woods, they have defined fairways that, you know, not just by ropes, but they're also very fair because they're really designed around disc golf and for disc golf in the more of an open sense, per se. And I think that's fair. I think it's a fair comparison between those two. But at the end of the day, Calvin also now becomes a multi-time Elite Series winner on the season. And that is...
playoff winner on the season.
Say that again?
And a multi-time playoff winner on the season.
Yes. That is what's really impressive to me, is to win it twice in playoffs. But, I mean, granted, his two playoff shots did not have to be... His playoff shot today was an excellent shot. It didn't have to be as excellent as it was, though, sure, because Corey Ellis did go out of bounds. But either way, I mean, winning two playoffs is exceptional. And so Calvin, you know, joins and has two Elite Series wins now. I think what we've got, Calvin, Ricky, Simon, is that it?
With double wins?
Yeah, I think that's
I have to run down the list. Has Paul not won two?
He's got Waco.
Waco, is that it?
That's all I know of.
Maybe that's it. And Chris Dickerson won a Silver Series, but then Champions Cup.
Dickerson got a couple Silver Series.
I think you're right. I mean, look, you know, the Player of the Year race is wide open right now.
It's wide open.
Like, with the way that things have gone over the past few weeks, I mean, like, the resurgence of Simon, Calvin now, like, stepping back up after kind of a period of, like, less than stellar play. Eagle, I mean, it's, like, somehow in the conversation, too. It's incredible. Like, obviously, he's going to probably need to win another major, given if he doesn't change his schedule. But it's been a very interesting season. And it's fun to watch Calvin play great. I mean, he was so good off the tees. I mean, the fact that here's a crazy stat, okay? He shot 83% inside the circle. That is a subpar number. It's not awful, but it's not good. Corey Ellis did not miss a circle one putt, and Calvin won the tournament. Like, to win the tournament over all of this field and all of these guys and shoot, you know, a pretty mediocre putting performance is pretty impressive. Now, the thing is, he hit some clutch putts. I mean, he wouldn't have been in a playoff potentially if he doesn't make that one on 17 after going OB. And that was not an easy putt. He's on the hill. He's at like 40 feet. And it's not like he's like a rock solid putter from that range. And it was money. I mean, it wasn't a cheapie. He nailed it. It was a great putt, like ice cold. And there was a lot of pressure because Corey's sitting up on the top of the hill inside the circle, and you know he's going to make it.
Right.
And, you know, ultimately, Calvin, like, gives back the lead, and it goes to the playoff. But the thing is, like, making that putt keeps it from having it to be ultra pressure on 18. Who knows? You know, it's impossible to rewrite what would have happened on 18 had he taken a bogey there, but... I'm just so impressed by Calvin. When he throws a disc like this, it's just so fun to watch him play.
It is fun to watch him play, and it's you know, times like these that we see Calvin, and we're reminded that last year, I mean, we were talking about the way Eagle and Calvin are set up to be the next Ricky and Paul. And I think it's really easy because we let that conversation fall away, and we forget about Calvin in a lot of ways. I guess it's been 2 years since Calvin had his truly, you know, excellent, consistent season, and was really playing well during the pandemic year. He had the two wins, one pre-COVID lockdown and then one post. And so it's easy to remember Eagle because of just his raw talent. But when Calvin really does play as well as, you know, as well as he can, it's something to behold. And I don't know, I honestly struggle to know what it is that is going to take, like, bumping Calvin up to the next level where he's day, you know, week in, week out in the top five, because he does have those kind of slumps where it, even if he does sort of well, it doesn't feel like he's in contention. So I don't know what it is that holds him back, because he feels, his game feels so consistent. But when he really does show up, he's a threat to win every single time, any course, because of how well-rounded his game is.
I think maybe Calvin has slightly more off weeks where he's like way off than some of the other very, very top players. But I mean, when you kind of look over it, like, he's been super solid for multiple years now. Like, let's go back to pandemic year 2020. You know, he has one finish outside the top 10. He was 11th at Idlewild, and otherwise he never missed the top 10. And, like, he was super solid. I mean, that year he won, he won Memorial. He won Jonesboro that year for the first time. He was second at USDGC. You know, kind of a weird year, of course, because of the big hiatus and the loss of the national tour, et cetera. And then last year, you know, he kind of stunk it up at Masters Cup, and he didn't play very well at all at USDGC, but otherwise was great. You know, won the match play, won Ledgestone, and it was, you know, top five at a ton of tournaments. And, you know, yeah, this year, like, he's been in a little bit of a bumpier spot, and, like, he's had some more finishes outside the top 10 than he has the past two seasons. But at the end of the day, he's also gotten two wins now and multiple podium finishes beyond that. Third at the Champions Cup, top 10 at the European Open. Like, it's just, again, it's like the high expectations for Calvin means that you, when you see him finish 10th or 11th, you go, well, you know, not that great of a, you know, a bad weekend for Calvin. The thing is, like, that's just because you expect him to be in the top three all the time. And a lot of the times he is. And he is now sitting after this weekend at number one in the Disc Golf Pro Tour standings. And let's see. How far? I'm going to check the U-Disc here to see the actual standings. But, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. Like, he's still been really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of the thing as well is, you know, and I swear, if someone pulls out, you know, Kona Pista in 2018, I'm going to freak out. But, you know, Calvin doesn't have a major. And his closest one being was, you know, was it probably at Worlds last year? No, that's not true. His closest one was the running down Chris Dickerson at USDGC and almost catching him. That was incredible. But I think that's the other thing is, you know, Calvin doesn't have a major yet. And I think he's he's due for one, but he's gonna that's win one. That's
the other thing.
Yeah.
So young still. He's like 23 or something. 22, I think. Yeah.
23.
He is barely out of college. It's easy to forget how young a lot of these elite players are because you've seen them for 3 or 4 years and you're like, oh, they must be like 28. No. Calvin Boyd is 20 points clear of Ricky in the Pro Tour standings. And remember, the Pro Tour standings include the majors now. So, like, this is all-encompassing of the season. It's Calvin, Ricky, Paul, Gannon, and then Dickerson. And of course, Dickerson has not played nearly as many events as the other guys.
You want to hear a crazy stat.
He's older than that as Moonrocks, just by the way. He can't be older than 25, right? I lose track of these things. He's 27 or 26. Okay.
Oh, so older he is older.
Older than I thought. Thank you, Artful.
He's a grumpy 80 at heart.
He gave like the literal same interview that he gave after Jonesboro.
He probably could.
Not the most dynamic interviewee.
I'm just here so I don't get fined, right?
I don't know if it's quite that, but.
You know, at the end of the day, though, when you look at Calvin, there's a lot of things that you've got to like about this, a lot of things that are going well for him. And, you know, someone mentioned this, but contract year Calvin, you know, that's got to be in the back of his mind that he's looking to get paid next season.
He's back, baby. Contract year Calvin is back.
Inver won't let him walk, will they? There's no way.
I mean, you can't say that. Not with Inver's track record. I think they shouldn't. I think they shouldn't. Like, what's the alternative? Like, the guy's number one in the disc golf Pro Tour. Like, especially if he wins a major down the stretch here, he wins a Pro Tour championship, they would be crazy to let him walk. They got to back up the truck. I mean, I've been saying this since the off season.
You've been saying this for a while.
Who else they got?
They got Nate Sexton. Don't sleep on him.
Did he make the cash? I actually didn't check to see.
I don't know. I didn't check either.
We got to look it up. It was close. It was close. I mean, but, you know, Nate's still selling them zillions of discs. Exactly. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. This is not an athletic contract.
Yeah, they'd be crazy. But Sexton was 2 strokes inside the cash line.
Okay, Sexton keeping it going, but he's hanging by a thread out here. Second time he's been on the border, but got the job done. Yeah. All right, so Paul kind of money asked Jesse. I don't think so, personally. I mean, does he sell discs like Paul? I can't know the answer to that, but I just feel like the answer is definitely no. I mean, those Halo Destroyers have to be selling pretty well. I don't doubt that, but I feel like the Halo Destroyers would sell no matter whose name you put on them.
I think you're right.
I just
the problem, here's the hard part. I mean, the truthful answer is that we don't know, right?
We don't know.
Because Ricky's getting Paul kind of money, but I know for a fact that DD is selling Ricky discs almost as effectively as Discraft sells Paul discs. I mean, those things were so coveted when they released. And it doesn't matter the mold. I mean, Ricky, some of those stuff that he sold is just stupid overstable, and that still was, you know, purchased like hotcakes. You know, Ricky is able to sell. I don't know if Calvin would sell his own line of discs as well as some of the other top guys.
Yeah, I don't know. What a great battle, though, you know, between him and Corey. Like, you know, even though Calvin ended up shooting 83% inside the circle, like, he didn't miss a circle one putt inside in round three, didn't bogey, went OB the one time on 17 and saved par. And Corey, you know, hits the whatever it was, 120 footer, you know, throw in for birdie on 10. just absolutely money down the stretch. I mean, he did take the bogey on 15, but to get four of the last five holes with birdie, including the very difficult 17, super impressive. You know, for him to get to a playoff felt like a win. And of course, he's going to be thinking about the things he could have done better, could have done differently. You know, if he hits one of those putts on from circle two on 8 or 9 and doesn't take the bogey on 15, like there's all kinds of things you think about. But I mean, he's really been putting himself in the mix a little bit more lately. And, you know, when you look at his 2022 season, he starts off ice cold, you know, not even in the picture. And then he's top 20 at Texas States and then fourth at Champions Cup. Like, remember that? Like, that was when we were kind of talking about Corey a little bit. And, you know, then he's been like in that 10 to 20 range a bunch. You know, now coming down the stretch, getting to a playoff, having a real chance to win an Elite Series event. It feels like a matter of time because, as you said earlier, it's not like he has any kind of glaring deficiency. Like, the dude can throw it a mile. I feel like it just comes down to consistency, and it comes down to, like, being in these spots. You know, you have to be in the pressure spot to make that putt – or, to make that drive on the playoff hole when you have to throw first. And he hasn't really been there before in that kind of spot. He makes the mistake. Next time, he'll probably do better.
Yep. Yeah, I really think that's spot on. And the biggest thing is, no matter what, I mean, we say this for amateurs, no matter how much you practice, there's nothing that you can substitute for experience of being in those positions. And that goes true for every level of the game. Once you move from amateur to open, you have to re-experience those pressure moments. And sure. Then when you move from open to the pro tour, you have to re-experience those. I'm sure Corey Ellis has had a playoff in his life. I bet he's probably had playoffs that he's won. But it's very different to have playoffs at your local A tier versus at a playoff with thousands of spectators lining the fairway and at a course like Toboggan. And so you're right. Like, he's going to think about those things that he did wrong. But I think the biggest thing of all from this is that the next time he's in a playoff, the next time he's in the stretch, he's going to remember this moment. He's going to remember this tournament. And it's going to inform choices that he makes moving forward. And and that's going to play a vital role in his ability to win and be successful moving forward.
Yep. Agree 100%. Paul says Innova doesn't need a disc mover as much as a big name. They have the biggest distribution network and infrastructure already. It's a fair argument. It's a fair argument. I mean, Innova has long been associated with basically the best player in the game. And I don't know that that person is Calvin, but by the end of the season, maybe we'll be saying that. It's going to be interesting. Calvin's getting paid either way. I mean, that is for sure. That is for sure. He is going to hit. His agent is already working on that. I promise you. All right. Let's talk about Natalie Ryan. Let's talk about FPO. You know, already the discussion has started online. It's in the comments. It's in the Reddit. It's, you know, on social media. We kind of knew. I mean, I feel like I knew this day would come where Natalie Ryan won a tournament. And how is everybody going to deal with that? And here we are. And, you know, let's just lay out the facts really quickly. Natalie Ryan is a trans woman. And that's been a hot button topic in sports, across sports, for some time now. And that conversation is only going to get reamplified now that she's won. I honestly don't know if I have much more to say on this topic than I've already said, to be honest with you. I think that as we wait for the science to be clear on, like, what are the physical advantages that are retained if you go through puberty as a man and then, you know, you take testosterone suppressants or whatever and you transition and you're a woman? Like, are there retained physical advantages that make a difference? You know, I think you can look at the world of sport and you can see that there's evidence that that seems possible. And I think disc golf's going to have to grapple with that. And there's going to have to be a decision about whether you want to be maximally inclusive or you want to try to focus on maximum competitive fairness. This is what I said, whatever we talked about this like 3 months ago. And I don't really think anything's changed for me, like, now that Natalie's won a tournament. Natalie played amazing this weekend. Mm-hmm. Was bombing it. Just absolute crush mode drives. This is the kind of course at Toboggan that I think Natalie can succeed on. And I think that, you know, the problem is this whole discussion about this topic is dominated by people who are like total asshole bigots who are like intentionally using like the wrong pronouns and like male names and stuff like that. And then people who are like super pro transgender, you know, full access to sports. And like there is a spectrum of opinion here that I think is not really discussed because a lot of people just don't want to talk about it. And I understand it because it feels like dangerous territory to discuss it. But when like the fact is that sports organizations are still figuring out how to deal with this issue. And you know, we can talk about the golf, but like the fact at the end of the day, like a lot of the discussion about Natalie's win this weekend is going to be about this topic. And that's kind of too bad, but it also feels inevitable given the situation.
Yes. And the two things that I guess I would add to it, because I'm with you, right? Like I don't want to continue to hash out the discussion because here's what we can say. Number one, I think Natalie in her interview said, you know, I want people to see that I'm not a monster. Like I'm not. And that kind of a view, I think, shows what is the most important fact is that the disc golf is secondary to the fact that she is trying to just live her life. And, sure. You know, that she didn't. Yes. And that's, you know, panic button says this, that Terry Miller's interview with Natalie post win is anyone needs to hear or say about this topic. I completely agree. It was a fantastic interview. And that's why I really think that, you know, she did not transition in order to go and try and win FPO.
How
right.
Stupid when I see people say that dumb shit like that.
It's ludicrous. So given that that's the case, we know what the rules are right now. We know that the rules are under review, but it's the same I think of this in the exact same way that I think about the U.S. amateur champion, where we said, oh, but I think that was a foot fault. The rules are written in a way that he didn't get called on it. He played legally, and thus he won. It's the same thing with Natalie Ryan. She is following the rules of the sport. She is following what have been outlined for her. And thus, we just need to respect that. And while we continue to develop and we'll decide as the sport continues to develop and sports in general continues to develop the scientific solutions on these questions, in the meantime, Natalie has done exactly what the PDGA has outlined for her to do. And so this win is as legitimate as any other win. And, you know, as was mentioned in the chat by Jenna, Natalie has been working her butt off to get here. So glad she managed to break through this weekend. Absolutely. She is a breakthrough player and it's an amazing victory for her. And so that's kind of the only non-disc golf part that I would even add to that.
You know, tap in Eagle on three in this final round, you know, came into the round with the 4-shot lead in great position, you know, gives back a couple strokes on nine with a double bogey. Starting to think, going to open up the door a little bit maybe, but solid play down the stretch. Owen Scoggins definitely made it interesting, getting, you know, four birdies in the last six holes. Amazing that Owen is able to stay in contention on this course. And not even stay in contention, like finish tied for second. Incredible. But Natalie Ryan, I mean, had put in the work in those, particularly in round two when she shot nine down. I actually didn't see what the official rating came in on that round, but that had to be over 1,000. And just a spectacular, like 6 under front nine, all around, just like super impressive. You know, Natalie talked about in the post game interview with Terry that, you know, just put in the work to like throw far, you know, went out to the field and threw far a ton and you can see it paying off. You can see it paying off.
Yeah. And it, that I forget what hole. I don't have my notes on me because I'm at my parents' house. But when Natalie had the basically park job eagle, just an incredible shot. That kind of control over the disc is always what just amazes me, because not only can they throw it far, it looks like, I mean, to be able to put a disc four or 500 feet away, just underneath the basket, is always just so impressive to me, especially when you're shaping shots. Because once it's out of your hand, I mean, you have zero control over that disc. You are, the only thing you control is the power and the angle release, and that's it. That's all you got.
No, no.
And
if you lean, Josh, it goes a little in the direction you're leaning. I don't know if you do that.
Right.
That's a tip for your next time.
If your card mate says nice, apparently that nullifies those effects, though. So
people saying nice is like when people say seven when you're at a craps table and you're like, whoa, 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 what are you doing? There's juju here.
Ari Jackson says and spin. You're right. I mean, there are a couple of factors, but the amount of things that you get to control, and for the time, like the amount of the flight, you control so little of it. And then for the disc still to be able to do what it does and like know your disc well enough, it's just astounding to me. And Natalie Ryan had several of those shots this weekend that I just watched, and just to see it was just exceptional to know that, because you don't throw shots like that just because you throw far. You throw shots like that from hours and hours of work so that you know your discs, like the back of your hand. And it's very clear that Natalie has done that this weekend, and that was just so exceptional to watch.
1,007 rating on that round number two. I saw somewhere somebody said it was her first time shooting 1,000-plus rated round. I guess I can confirm that if I go through the ratings detail stuff. Anyway, I'll try to see if that's the case. Sort by rating. Well, did it in an A tier last year. Shot 1,008 rated round. But that first time at an Elite Series event, what a great round it was to put her in a position to go out and win this tournament. Fascinating, fascinating. I think it's felt like Natalie could get one for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I'm trying to remember now what tournament it was. Was it Vegas? No.
OTB?
DNF'd at Vegas.
It was OTB or OTB, Portland? OTB.
That's 100% what it was. It was OTB.
Yeah.
Yeah, was like in the mix late. Ended up finishing second.
That was the one where Paige had like, what was that, 8-9 stroke win, a lead or something going into the final round, 10 strokes?
And then Natalie closed it down, but then bogey or, you know, took double bogeys late. Yeah, on 17, 18.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Wow, that was crazy. That was a crazy round. But I mean, that goes to show you, right? Like a performance like that foreshadowed this, and I think luckily for Natalie, that round came earlier when she wasn't way behind, and that meant that she was able to play with a lead. And it's just so much easier to play with a lead.
The order of your rounds do matter.
It does matter. It does matter.
They absolutely matter.
Shot selection down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it does.
Wyatt says own is one of the stories of the season. That's fair. I think that's fair. Yep. I mean, for her to perform as well as she has week in and week out on any course you put her on is pretty darn impressive. It's pretty darn impressive. She was first in putting, both circle one and circle two this weekend.
Talking.
And was 15th in circle one in regulation. And like, you know, she maximizes her abilities. I think that's the thing that I find so impressive. It's like, sure, she can't throw as far as some of the other players on tour, but she's not going to bleed strokes very often. And she went out there and shot a sparkling 8-under today, no bogeys, and hit a couple. I mean, what did she, I think four circle two putts. Crazy. She's just been so good week in and week out. Where is she in the standings right now? She's got to be up there. She's fourth behind Paige, Kat, and Val Mondejano.
That's so cool.
It's cool.
That is so cool. Speaking of I'm curious, where is... Okay, Kristen Tatar is 8th. That was just a side note while I had standings up.
Natalie Ryan is 10th with the win this weekend. Oof. Yeah, so a fun weekend overall.
Yeah. We got to give a shout-out to Emily Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Tying for second. That's incredible.
Killing it.
Is that her top finish?
I think so.
She's now 13th in the pro tour standings.
Oh, she was tied for third at DDO.
Yeah, so second is her top finish.
This is her second podium finish of the season.
Last year, she played the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Last year, she played the Jonesboro Open and Dynamic Discs Open, and that was it. And now this year, she's got 2 podium finishes. That's a great.
She's 13th in the Pro Tour, standings.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Good all-around game. Good putting. Good drives. Like, has the tools. FPO is very interesting right now. Like, there's a bunch of players. Her, Holland Handley, Ella Hansen. Obviously, we've seen Valerie Mondejano, like, make the leap already. I think Natalie Ryan's in this mix and had been before this weekend. Like, there's a bunch of players who are starting to be truly competitive. Like, I think I've mentioned this before, but like, you think back to 3-4 years ago, and it just was like the conversations about FPO were not as interesting. They just weren't. It was like, is Paige going to win this weekend, or is Katrina going to win this weekend, or is Sarah Hogan going to win this weekend? And there just really wasn't much variety in the conversation. It was like, is Paige on a hot streak or a cold streak? And that's just not the conversation anymore. Like, obviously, Paige is still the best player on earth and still a major topic of conversation, but it doesn't necessarily dominate the conversation week in and week out anymore. And that's great. It's great for the division. I think the entertainment value has been there all year in FPO. And I think that's only going to continue to increase as the, just the growth of FPO overall and the growth of the sport continues.
It not only has it been there all season, but it's been better than MPO in a lot of tournaments, especially early in the season.
Oh, yeah.
When Kristen was there. Yeah. And like you said, that's so good for entertainment value and for that division in order for it to grow financially and otherwise. And it's like you said, it's spurred on by a lot of these young, exciting players who have come from a variety of backgrounds, too. You have Val, who is taking the long, played every junior division and played through every division all the way up to now the highest level. You have Ella Hansen, comes over from Ultimate. You've got a college athlete in Holland Handley. Lots of stories about how these women have gotten to the best level of the game, and it's made for exciting, not just on course competition, but storylines, you know, coming back to our previous conversation, started the pod, it creates exciting storylines and people to root for and be fans of that draws fans into the division.
Let's get your questions in the Upshot Live chat. Again, roll over the voice channel, click the little dialogue box. Quick hitter questions right now. Panic Button says, biggest improvement of the FPO skill set in the last 2 years is consistency. Makes for great entertainment. Sure. I mean, it'd be interesting to kind of look at stats over the last 3 years, sort of like aggregate stats of the top 10 players and see where we've seen changes. It does feel like there's more players able to make clutch shots with regularity, and putting has continued to improve across the board. I hope we see Heather Young back on tour at some point.
Quick shout out to Panic Button. They put in the chat when we first got rolling, Japan loves you guys. Happy Monday.
So, Happy Monday. It must be morning over in Japan right now.
Jesse, what?
Josh, what friends have a storyline of the D-Glo? This is gonna have to become a recurring meme here on the React show. You're gonna have to come in with your episode. We're gonna start naming the episodes the one with the D glow or whatever.
I'm going to have to think about this. I'm not pulling it off on the spot. Oh my gosh.
Did we vote for PDGA Board of Directors?
I did.
I did not, but let me tell you why. It's because I'm not actively a member right now. I need to change that. I haven't played a tournament since sometime last year. I feel bad about that. I've run two tournaments in the last 12 months, and I'm planning to run another one this year. So I really should become a member because I care about this stuff. I care about using this platform to help allow people to make informed decisions. What's the last day of voting? Is it like today?
Today. Yeah. Today.
Okay. We won't be able to plug it on the show. If you're a PGA member and you haven't voted, you still have time to go check in, think about what you want to prioritize and make your votes. It actually does matter. It really does.
It does. I mean, yeah, we've talked about this, but your vote is one of very few votes. And so it has a lot more weight than most elections. So go get your vote in. But yes, I did vote. I did it this week, but I'd known about the deadline. I was been planning on it. So
is the toboggan course major worthy? And or are you hoping for changes before Champions Cup 2023? That's from Paul.
Yes, I guess. I don't know. There are a lot of things I like about the toboggan. And I compared it to Jonesboro in that way. I think that toboggan has some really signature holes that are exciting and good. I also feel like a lot of toboggan runs together in my head, though, more than other courses. It feels like there's a lot of shots that are very similar. And I don't know if I have any specific changes that I would say. But I am... it's fine. I'm not as excited about it. It's not my favorite major course in the world. And I don't think it's the best one that we'll have next year. But I think it's probably better than Emporia. So,
listen, here's what I think about toboggan. All right. The elevation is cool. It's good to have a course that has a lot of elevation change like this, but I agree with what you say. The problem is there's a little too much tinkering. And there's not enough, like, differentiation in hole types. Like, how many holes it's like, oh, massive uphill shot to the green. Massive downhill shot to the green. Like,
with the turnover,
It's a good course. It's a tour-level course. It's something different. But it's not the
best course ever. Four rounds of toboggan is going to be a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fine. There's some really good holes. I like some of the challenging approach shots. It's cool to see elevation change, but it could be a better course, I think. Okay, the fans in Michigan, best in the country. Well, they're going hard out there.
Definitely. They are.
They're running all over the course. Course control, always a questionable thing at D-Glow. it's fun,
though. The number of times people had to duck for discs.
crazy. Let's see what else we got. Did the players coming back from European Open perform worse because of the travel / jet lag? Somebody should run a regression. It doesn't really feel like it to me, though. I feel like the people we saw playing well over in Europe played pretty well this weekend, too. I mean, you know,
yeah,
Paul was good. Paige was good.
I thought it was going to be poor, but... Ricky did travel. Gavin Rathbun did not. Adam Hammes did travel, I think. Kyle Klein did not. I don't think Andrew Marweed did, but I'm not sure.
Paul Calvin McBeth, did.
Brody Smith. Yeah, Calvin did. Yeah.
And Brody
and he
well
won it. So. Yep, and he traveled.
Feels to me like it's a lot more important about like what your current form is and
less important about whether you were on a plane for a few hours. I want to talk about Gavin Rathbun, but I want to do it on Tuesday. Gavin getting back into form is a great thing, but we can't talk for 90 minutes right now. So, eight of the top 12. That's a great stat. Thank you, Moonrocks. Eight of the top 12 in MPO played European Open. So to me, that tells you what you need to know. That
I think so too.
The best players tend to go over there because they have the sponsorship or whatever, they think that they can win money, and then they're still the best players when they come back here. All right.
Joel
well,
Freeman
I think
should... against Joel Freeman.
Oh gosh, I don't want to talk about that. It's like clockwork with this guy. Like, go on the Insta, complain about something, then go on an Insta, be like, I had to delete my last post because of the negativity, and why don't you just not make the first post?
Charlie, this is a notification that I just got on my phone.
Okay.
And I know we might get some feedback that is not of the kind variety for doing this, but Deebo Samuel just got a 3-year max extension with the 49ers.
Well, you know what? I absolutely love to hear that. Okay. The guy.
I'm sure you do.
Oh, it was looking grim there for a little while, but he was just trying to make that money. I need to think about whether I'm happy that he's getting 3-year max. I think I am. I mean, I think he was our best offensive player. While we're on the topic of other sports, rest in peace, Bill Russell. Legend of the game.
Rest in peace. Yes, he
was. Wow, deep. That's breaking news to me. I did not know that. I didn't even know that was.
It just popped up on my phone as we were talking. So,
there Let's go. They believe in Trey Lance, Josh. They believe in Trey. All right. We're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. And more D-Glo Talk Tuesday. And look forward to getting back into a little bit more regular rhythm with the show. I apologize for kind of like the weird schedule, stuff coming out late. It's been a really crazy couple weeks with, Josh having COVID and me being like all over the country traveling and doing crazy event stuff. So appreciate your patience with us, and hope to be back on a more consistent basis here coming up. Let us know who you want to see in the interview series. Shoot us a message at upshotultimate.com. Hit us up here in the Discord, and have a great night. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Charlie.